Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow Alex Ross Something the SDR Show? This week, direct from the band The Bad Wolves, Doc Coyle joins us, me and James Mattern. We get into all things Bad Wolves and just his story. He's got a lot of interesting things. He was in God Forbid and just a bunch of other bands. He has a band with two of the dudes from Metallica. Cool dude. We do this show every single Wednesday, every single Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time at GasDigital.com. Use the code SDR14. And for spring, you're going to get a 2-week free trial, 14-day free trial, if you use the code SDR14. And you can listen to every single show in its entirety, commercial-free, in HD video if you choose to. All at GasDigital.com. Here it is right now, the Doc Coyle of Bad Wolves episode of the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I'm beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art. You need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. James Mattern from his kitchen with some sort of, like, actually think cool hat on. I like the hat.
First of all, my hat game in general is great. You can be a hater all you want, but thank you. I'm not going to wear this on stage tonight, but it's great for a Zoom podcast.
You had like a Newsies hat on I did not like, and I'm not sure what that weird blue thing over your left shoulder is. It looks a little weird.
Oh, so this is a gift I got. I haven't opened yet for my birthday from Chrissy D, from DeStefano. It's a Guinness gift pack.
Okay, fine. I'll let it slide then. So now
there's pretzels in there, for Christ's sakes, Ralph. I'll bring you some.
I love pretzels. God damn it. They're one of my real weaknesses, pretzels and red vines. So we've tried to make this happen a few times. First with the new singer, didn't happen. Then with this guy about a week ago, didn't happen. But I persevered. And we finally make it happen. Let me give him the intro he deserves. He's a guitarist. Part of the band Bad Wolves, part of the band God Forbid, founding member, also in Wedding Band. He's a writer. He also hosts the very intermittently recorded X-Man podcast. I know him personally, though I doubt he remembers me, from being a shipwrecked stowaway. I was the host of that shipwreck thing for 10 years, and he was part of the stowaways. And he was in the Gas Digital Studios recording the Josta show not that long ago, maybe right before the pandemic. It is none other than Doc Coyle. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I don't know if I even deserve a
After canceling on us twice, you don't deserve any of that. Let's be honest.
Majestic. Well, the point thing is you're like, this is hard to pull off. I'm like, just hit me up. Don't reach out to management. Just call me.
Have each other's numbers. I'm not even sure. But I'll tell you this, is that if I do that, when I do that, rather, and a publicist gets wind of it, then we never work with that publicist again because they get pissed off.
Here's the thing, all right? I am a publicist, okay? I am a podcaster. I know everyone. I'm the exception, all right? Just saying. Half the stuff Bad Wolves does, I book for the band.
Okay. Nice.
You got to cut middlemen, you know, we love them, but sometimes they got to go.
Okay, fair enough. And also, by the way, congrats. I think it was maybe almost a year ago you got engaged. Is that right? Is that about a year ago? Congrats on that. And
congrats, buddy.
And also, by the way, before we get into the history of you and all this other shit, Bad Wolves, man, I love the band, but Jesus Christ, like, I have to imagine, it's 4 albums in 5 years, but that's not enough. Let's put out an EP. That's not enough. Let's put out another single.
Yeah.
You got to take a break, for God's sakes. It's ridiculous what you guys are doing.
Yeah, tell the guy who owns our label. He just told us to write more songs.
Yeah, is that what happens? It is crazy because, like, when we were prepping this interview a week ago, the new EP was called Knife. There's one new song, Knife.
It's not really an EP. It's just
one new song. It's one new song that doesn't exist on the album.
Yeah, and then they take like songs from the album,
right?
Put it that so that you know it gets more listens for like those songs on the record. But it's not; it's just one song. But usually, when we make an album, there's always like three or four songs that don't make it or weren't finished that we end up putting out later anyway. And then we like we'll do like remixes, or we'll do acoustic versions, or we'll get like a feature on stuff. So it ends up being like a special edition. And but you have to do that; you have to constantly be putting things out, you know, and keeping people you know tapped into what you're doing, because you know the attention spans aren't what they once were, excuse me.
Yeah, and I mean not only so, but when we were going to record this, which was less than a week ago, now Octane is a new single, which is not even the single anymore. And with what you said, how you've you guys, you know, get together, not all the songs make it to the album. Isn't there a song on this record that you've been trying to get on since the second record? I'm not sure what song it is, but I heard you say that somewhere that there's one song that you kept pushing, and now finally it made it onto the album.
Well, I don't push, okay? I'm not the mind, you know, I want everyone to like it, you know? Like, if it's good, then I'll advocate for it. But it's just, at this point, it's an instrumental. There's been some vocal stuff written, but if it's not done, I can't really be that, you know, hyped up about it being on something. It's got to be finished, and it's not finished, so it just hasn't been finished. There's been a lot of things like that where it's like a piece of music will kind of just exist and it'll hang around. And then by the time it comes out, it'll be three or four albums later. And that's just how it is, especially with a band like this where so many people write. I'm like, you know, third or fourth on the totem pole when it comes to writing in this band.
That also, by the way, so I mean, I want to get into the early days because, you know, first we'll start with that Doc Marlin coil, I believe it is, right? Marlin's not very well known, but that is
it
your
sounds like you're from the IRS.
And Doc was a name given you. Your brother would call you that when you were kids, right? You just couldn't say Marlin, I guess. I don't know how that came about.
Before my memory, this is what people told me, you know, when I was like a baby, basically.
Right. But you don't know why you ever asked your brother. He doesn't remember why he even tried calling you Doc. It just stuck.
Nope. Maybe he just didn't speak English good, you know?
Or maybe you were watching a lot of
Bugs Bunny
shows when you were kids and he didn't know any better.
Yeah. Can
I just say, what a great name, though. I mean, Marlin Coyle, phenomenal. But you throw the Doc in front of it? Holy
and then, by
shit.
The way, the abbreviation is DMC, so you could get confused with him maybe once in a while. Why not?
Well, my actual middle name is David, so it's actually MDC.
Oh,
so okay. DMC, he's throwing that there. Or I can just be Dr. Marlin Coyle, you know, just you know, walk around with a stethoscope.
Oh, my God. Yes.
These are all very smart ideas. I think you should go with all of them. And then... you grew up in New Jersey. What people don't know, a place that I used to go to all the time in New Jersey, and we actually did my old radio show. We did a couple of shows from there. Didn't you bartend at Dingbats for a hot minute? Weren't you there for a bit? Or am I wrong?
I worked at Duff's in Brooklyn for 5 years.
Okay.
And then I want to say like 2012 or 2013. I only worked at Dingbats maybe like 6 months, maybe 8 months, like right before I moved to LA. But listen, those jobs, bartending in metal bars is like as rock and roll a job as you're going to get outside of playing on stage, and really helped me out a lot. Shout out to Freddie over there.
Yeah.
Donna May. They were great, and we would play there all the time. And I remember Jose from Sirius. He had like a local night there, and I would like, you know, I was teaching guitar at the time, so I'd go over there, hang out, you know, drink some shots, jump on stage, play some like Metallica songs and Slayer, and just it was a good vibe.
By the way, is that why you guys called it Octane, to hope that Jose would play the shit out of it? Is that why that song is called Octane?
No. So the way that started was the guy that we did the song with, Nick Nocturnal. He's probably the biggest, like, or maybe him and Jared Dines are kind of neck and neck, like biggest like metal streamer YouTube guy. And he makes these songs like and so he did this thing called How to Octane Core in 30 Seconds. He made this little piece of a song. And then Octane hit him up, was like, hey, if you want to make that a full song, we'll play it on Octane. And so then he reached out to me and DL. I was like, yo, I'd love to have you sing on it. And we worked on it on tour, but we didn't finish it till recently. And yeah, so it was pretty much... you know, it was always meant for that.
Okay, that's
you know,
what it is on purpose. Okay,
that's why it's blowing up.
And not to throw Freddie under the bus, but it is a funny story, and it's directly related to Dingbats and Shiprocked. I brought them on 1 year to be just because we had I would get rooms. I hosted, I told you, for like 10 years. They'd give me extra rooms sometimes to just fill cabins. So I gave them a couple of rooms, and there's was a video of them stealing the fucking Shiprock banners. And they got banned for life from Shiprock.
Come on,
so ridiculous.
I kind of respect it. I'm doing a cruise for the first time in a month or two. I'm stealing everything. Yeah, I'm letting them know right now on this podcast. They're probably scouting me right now. I'm taking all the shit, baby.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Don't steal shit you could probably get for free.
Right. That's for sure, too.
They probably just give it to you.
Yeah. No, it's better. It's better.
Because they denied it. You couldn't afford it? There's a video of it.
There's a video of it. It's great. I want proof. I want to only steal things that are free. Why? Because I'm a wild card motherfucker. I want people on their toes when I'm around.
I used to DJ at the strip club Lace in New Jersey, and for a long time.
Strip club DJ, nah.
Hard to believe, right? And
you're the voice of the audience right now.
There was a girl that was trying to say that she did nothing with the dude in the VIP room, and then they go to the videotape and they call us all in. She's like, "Oh, look, she said nothing happened, so let's all watch the tape." There's about 10 of us watching as she pulls the guy's pants down, and it was great, really funny moment. Anyway, let me ask you this question in doing research, you said, which I thought was a cool thing, some band, one of the first CDs you got, a Jersey band, listed all of their influences on the album. And then you went out and bought those albums because you're like, I already fucking like this band. Let me see who inspired them. I'm curious what band that was. Do you know?
It was a lot of bands. That was very common. So it wouldn't be like in the liner notes, that like sometimes they would just thank bands.
No, that's a very common.
They would thank, and then there was a band. You know what? There was one specific band that I remember where it actually had like an influences section, and I'm forgetting the name. I can't remember the name, but a really cool band. And it was, and through that, I discovered, like, I remember the first time I heard of like some of the death. Like they almost put out like specific records or like death. This album.
Oh, that's atheists, cool.
Cynic, you know, I was like weird, like proggy death metal bands, and you know, and because I feel like back then you really had to discover things, and even being like being the fact that we were in New Jersey and we had stores like Vintage Vinyl and Curmudgeon Music, right? There would be like European metal bands where their stuff would be on import, where you couldn't even get it.
Right.
In other places. So we were hearing about bands, you know, bands like Children of Bodom and Soilwork before they were on Nuclear Blast, and they were everywhere. And so we were like ripping off these bands 2 years before everyone else was ripping them off. Wow. We thought we were original.
Right. Remember how cool it was like you look at one of your idol bands and what t-shirt they would wear. Like, oh, I want to go find that band. That I don't think anyone gives a fuck anymore about that. That doesn't happen anymore. That was like a big deal when like Axl wore a TSOL shirt. I remember that. Like, it was freaking out. Holy shit. You know, it doesn't happen anymore.
But Axl wore the NWA shirts and Public Enemy shirts. Do you remember that shit?
I remember that too. That was crazy. And I know you said the first two videos you ever saw were Megadeth and Guns N' Roses November Rain. That shows your age, that you're so much younger than me. But that's what started to really get you inspired, or were you already playing at that point? I know Slash is one of your favorite guitarists, so was that when that happened, when you watched him on the out in the desert playing in the November Rain solo?
Yeah, well, there's the definitive light bulb moment, which I was at. So, like, I grew up in New Brunswick. You know, it's primarily, you know, black people and Hispanic people. But there was this one white family lived in the neighborhood, and I was friends with the two girls that lived there. And I was staying with my dad, and I came back, and I hadn't seen him in a while. And during that time, they'd become total metalheads, right? Mm-hmm. So we're hanging out, and they have, like, posters of Sebastian Bach on their wall and Axl Rose, and I don't even know who these guys are, but I'm just like, oh, they're turning into teenagers and they're getting that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they're watching MTV, and I saw the music video for Symphony of Destruction, and it was like, you know, it's like everything went in slow motion, and it just made sense. And mm-hmm. I went back home, and I told my brother, I was like, there's this thing called MTV and this band called Megadeth. And then we just kind of dove in. You know, at the time you have cable and you just, you know, I don't know. I think I have just a very, and my brother, I think, was the same, where we just have a very obsessive quality, right? Like we were into comic books and it's like, that's all we care about. And we're just mm-hmm. like devouring that, or into baseball cards or What it just didn't really matter what it was.
You guys were really cleaning up with the ladies at those years, I'm sure. Baseball cards and comic books. My God.
Oh, yeah. My mom let me hang out with her. She was cool.
That's cool.
Family reunions. It was nice. I fully embrace the nerd tag because I think that's the only way you get really good at anything is through obsession.
And absolutely.
So, you know, like we just stayed in our house and we lived in New Brunswick and it was, you know, urban environment, a lot of trouble you can get into. And we didn't get into trouble because all we were doing was at home watching music videos and playing guitar and, you know, reading comic books and just kind of, we were tapped into all the stuff that we enjoyed.
So when you discovered MTV and you went home and told your brother, did you guys have MTV and you were unaware of it?
Yeah, we had cable, basic cable or whatever. Or
you
maybe
didn't know that it was a thing. It was a channel you had, you were just unaware of it.
Yeah, we just were not, you know, and, you know, back then it's like, even now, it's like you have cable, but you watch like four channels. It's like ESPN, TNT, you know, CNN. You watch like four channels, even though you have cable, you know?
So then
Ralph doesn't
point,
even know ESPN exists.
No, I don't.
Just so you know this. He couldn't tell you what the letters stood for in that goddamn thing.
Oh, God, I definitely could not. Eastern Sports, maybe? Is that right?
Sports is correct, Ralph. Your instincts are good on that.
Network is in the end, and his network.
Yes. Entertainment Sports Programming Network.
Oh, I wouldn't have gotten that.
I couldn't have told you that.
Okay.
You get a pass, sir. But any chance to bust Ralph's balls about not liking sports, I fucking go for it.
So then at some point, you and your brother start a band. I think you're fucking 16 and you create God Forbid. Is that right?
I was 16. He was 17. But I mean, saying we created it is kind of giving us too much credit. Basically, the guy, our best friend that we used to draw comic books with, he was like, oh, yeah, my cousin, him and his friends, they play music. And we literally like got in his car and like brought our little amps over there. And it was like Corey and Byron, who would, you know, being God Forbid, and their friend, Robbie. And so like Byron was playing guitar, but then we were playing guitar. So then he just started playing bass. And then we were just like, there were no plans. There was nothing. We were just making noise, you know, and just probably didn't sound very good, but it was just like, I don't know. It was almost like, back in the day, it was just like something to do. You were just like, we're just doing something and had no plan. We weren't God Forbid for a couple of years, but we would jam. And then Corey was writing songs early on. And we would like record a demo and it would be terrible. And we'd do like a show and it would be terrible. And then we would like get depressed and then we wouldn't see each other for like 2 months. And then we get back together, and then the process kept repeating until it actually started being kind of good.
And I think that first album was 99, Reject the Sickness, right? I think so, like right about that time. And then God Forbid, although you feel was always very underrated, which is probably true, it's getting more, I think, respect in the last 10 years than it did in the first 10 years it existed, it seems like. But, you know, you played Ozfest. At one point, you guys are making the whopping heavy metal lifestyle of $70 a day on Ozfest. Is that about right?
No, $70 a week.
$70 a week. Wow. Jesus
$10
Christ.
A day per diem.
Jesus Christ. That's fucking crazy.
And we paid to do the tour. So we had to.
Oh.
So it was a buy on. It was a $70,000 buy on. Plus, we had to take $100,000 in tour support to pay to be to like exist. So we went in the hole $170,000. That's why we still have Century Media money now.
Jesus. Yes, James? Doing the math, James.
So $10 a day
for food
ahead or for the whole band?
I imagine
that was per person. You know, we'd have to like share.
Oh my God.
You could have just pretended there were 40 other people in the band and then you could have made a little money on the side. That would have been a good
You're just hitting 20 piece McNuggets all day, bro. 20 piece nuggies.
Money. So you get, you know, the label gives you money, but it's your money that you get paid out of. So you're just going further into the hole.
That's why all those bands years ago got fucked with merch because they're like, oh, great, we get merch. And they didn't realize they were paying for the merch. And if it didn't sell, then they had to pay back. That it was just there's warehouses full of unsold merch for rock bands. All right, before we go any further, this is a brand new sponsor on the show. And if you are a cigar lover, boy, is this the good one for you? It is Small Batch Cigar. Smallbatchcigar.com. Free shipping on every order. Boom. Everything arrives in 2-3 days. Boom. High quality cigars. You get 5% rewards instantly. And it's an amazing selection of rare, limited, and hard to find cigars. One of the best thorough packaging in the industry. If you are a cigar fan, This is where you want to go. Small Batch Cigar. And here's the cool thing. Use the code GAS10, G-A-S-10. You're going to get not only your 10% off, but your 5% reward points. So if you're a cigar fan, there is nowhere else to go but smallbatchcigar.com. Use the code GAS10, 10% off, and your 5% reward points. What more could you ask for if you're looking for those rare, limited, and hard-to-find cigars? Smallbatchcigar.com. Let's get back into it. So yeah. Then, I think this is around 2012, God forbid, dissipates or at least takes a break, because I think you're doing some stuff with them recently. But then there's a few years where, like, you're kind of, like, doing different things. You were almost in Killswitch Engage, I think, at one point, right?
Not Killswitch, but I was in a – this is going back to, like, 2010 or even earlier, 2008. Like, I went to one of their shows, and – Adam D couldn't do some do a tour, and they ended up getting Peter Wickers I think he did some stuff, and then Pat Lackman maybe did some stuff, but they were like, oh, we wanted to get you, but you were busy. I've either filled in or almost filled in for like a lot of bands,
which is where I guess the name of the podcast comes from also, right? The X-Man. I mean, it's kind of a play on Axeman, but also because you were like,
it really is about my process. Like, when I left God Forbid, my whole identity was tied up in that band. Like, I didn't have anything else. I didn't know how to do anything else. And, you know, and a lot of my self-worth was tied up in that. And so when the band started going down, I started going down. So I had a 2 or 3 years of like finding myself and kind of contemplating, like, what does it all mean? What am I, you know, what all this stuff. And so I started writing about a lot of these experiences after the band broke up, and I was able to be very honest in the writing, and people really identified with that. And I thought I wanted to start a podcast in 2012, but it didn't get off the ground. And then that idea, you know, kind of stuck with me. And I think, you know, sometimes just with branding of like, I was like, well, that's a catchy title. And I like the idea of like, you were doing something, that was your job, that was your whole life, and then it's over. And then you have like this like identity crisis. And maybe I can talk to people who have left bands about their experiences. And so that's the kind of the,
I thought it'd be cooler if it was you detailing your transition to a woman, the X-Man. That would be cooler.
I mean,
I thought it was going to be about Wolverine and Gambit. That's what I would love to hear you break down Colossus.
But that is an E in it, not just, it's not a solo.
One guy's trying to get me canceled, other guy's trying to get me sued. All right, Jesus.
I'm sure that Marvel would really love your opinions on Rogue and her tight clothing.
So then there's a band called Vagus Nerve for a minute or two. Then there's a band called, I'm going to fuck up, it's Metal, but with M-E-T-Y-A-L. Metal. And they open actually for Queensryche at one point, which is one of my favorite bands of all time. Then in 2017, Bad Wolves comes along. Is that right? That's when that started.
I started playing with the guys in 2016, but we didn't release any music till 2017.
Right. Okay. And so then the story, which I was wrong about this, and I apologize, I was misquoted, because I thought you went, because we had somebody on, we talking about that zombie cover, which blew the fuck up, but you were about to record with her and she died, right? It was like the day before or something like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't there. I did not play a note on that cover.
Oh, okay.
And it was these things were happening in the background, in like behind the scenes. And even like I had heard that it was a thing that might happen, but I wasn't aware that it was actually happening until she passed away. And then the story kind of blew up. That's a very surreal experience.
Yeah, I just realized because we had the drummer from the Cranberries on. That's why it came up. We just had the drummer from the Cranberries on, so that it all ties together. And I asked if he had heard it, and I even forgot his answer. But anyway, so then that song blows you guys the fuck up, like crazy. And then another album with Tommy. And then, without getting into too much details, Tommy left the band, right? From what I understand, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, I promise you. He was trying to say he was fired, but from what I understood, he started the band with, John?
John.
Right? Yeah, so you can't leave a band you started. So you can't be fired for a band you started. Well,
they had a 50-50 partnership. Right. So literally, no one could be fired. You had to, like, essentially, no one could fire the other person. And I'm not, even to this day, I'm not like an official, like, bit part of the Bad Wolves business. Right. John is still the only like guy now, but essentially they had to negotiate a settlement for someone to leave. But if, you know, technically he could be like, hey, I'm done.
Yeah, you keep the name, I'm leaving. Right.
No, but you could stop the band from it. Because if you own 50% of the business and you don't give them permission to carry on, you could literally stop everything
if you
wanted to. But yeah, it's a long, complicated.
Yeah, it's not it's been also, by the way, which I heard you say, which I feel bad because I get this, but not to the level that you guys do. The amount of negativity fans fucking spew. I don't look at my comments because I can't. Yeah. I just, people fucking hate me and it is what it is. But I know that especially he was such a polarizing dude because of his stance on a lot of things.
Yeah.
Thankfully you replaced him with someone that what a badass motherfucker DL is, right? And comes from our Acacia Strain and can also play guitar and he writes as well. Came to
out
a lot
of
with the tip.
His out talent.
Of control, dude. But dare I say, and Shannon, feel free to chime in on this, maybe equally good looking. They're both good looking motherfuckers. And so, Shannon, would you say DL's up there?
Yeah, yes. I would say they're in like the same type. Like a woman that goes for one would go for the other.
Right, exactly. Wow. So I know that you went through about 20 singers. I know also John makes the decisions. And you're also a good looking dude. There's no hiding that. But the question is, was there ever thought about, we got to make sure this guy's at least good looking because Tommy's ridiculous. So do we care? Or that would never even came into the fucking conversation.
Well, I think one of the things that has really evolved for me as this long being in the music business is kind of being aware just in general of how important just, you know, image and look and how that kind of connects. Like, just, it's like casting a role in a film, right? When you bring someone in a band, and that goes for me too. Like I almost got kicked out of a band for being too tall.
How tall are you?
What?
Swear to God.
How tall are you?
Happened, but I looked like the band security guard. You know,
but how tall are you? How tall are you, Doc? I forget.
6'2"
So yeah, everyone's just
shorter
than
me.
Yeah, I'm like 6'6". So everyone's just short, 6'5" and a half. Everyone's just shorter than me, so it's hard to tell. But,
that's why you're not in a band. Too tall.
Yeah, yeah, that's the only reason. So obviously, because he has like a, forget about the fact it's not fun if he can't sing. You know, then what the fuck? Who cares if he's good looking? But to find that total package, you had to make sure that it was. There's probably guys that were good singers that maybe just weren't as fucking cool looking.
Well, I mean, but it's everything. I mean, there's probably a guy right now on YouTube that, you know, there's many people who are way better than me at guitar, right? But you need, it's not, that's just one of the skills that you need. You need to have the right look. You need to be able to perform live. You need to be able to do things like this, do interviews. And
have a cool name. Don't sleep on that, Doc. You got a goddamn cool name.
That's it. But a lot of people, you know, Slash, that's not his real name. He got himself a cool name, you know? You know, M Shadows, all right? Sometimes you gotta give yourself a name, you know?
So he was born M Shadows. I don't know if you know that.
It's on his birth certificate. We know. but what I'm saying is there's many things, and this goes, you know, in the history of all music, right? Like, it's one of the things when you're younger and you don't really understand it, it's very like it's subliminal, right? You're like, oh, I like Guns N' Roses, but in your mind you don't realize that part of the reason why you like them is that they look that cool,
right? It's, of course, I used to buy records solely for that reason. When I used to go buy CDs and albums, I would buy it based on if I thought the band looked cool. That's okay. You couldn't hear it, you weren't able to hear it.
Well,
it didn't matter.
Someone told me something that I think is brilliant, and I think it's true. They say half the audience listens with their ears and half the audience listens with their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a band that ignores one or the other, you're probably going to run into trouble. Like, you know, obviously the biggest and most iconic bands have it all, right? They have the total package. But if you're a super, you know, if you have a gimmick or you're very image based, but the songs are lacking, you're only going to get so far. And if you're a band where you make great music, but, you know, there's not much imagery, I think it's harder, especially in the last like 20 years, it's harder to find bands that break through. I think it was very easy in the 90s where like kind of being very basic was part of like, that was a big part of the grunge and alternative aesthetic and indie aesthetic that is kind of, it's much harder to break through if you don't, you're not doing something dynamic visually. Even now, I think we're kind of more on the boring side visually comparatively to a lot of our contemporaries, you know?
So yeah, a lot of bands that are really doing a lot out there. But let me ask you this. So one thing that made me laugh, because again, just because we had Tommy on, right? And 90% of the interview was very normal. And then at the end, he got onto a little bit of his conspiracy theories. And then I was listening to another podcast and surprised me how you dig your heels deep into some conspiracy theories too.
Really?
You believe.
Anti-conspiratorial.
You believe aliens visited the world we live in right now. Am I incorrect or incorrect?
I don't think that's really, the only thing that would make it a conspiracy is if this idea that aliens exist are out there and then the government is covering up, that would be the conspiracy part of it. So it's like, whether you believe me, I believe scientifically there's enough evidence, physical evidence, video, photo, radar, eyewitness account. These are all things that if you were in a court of law, these are metrics you determine whether something is real or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's plenty enough of that to say there is something. I do think
aliens exist 100%. I just don't know if they've been here, but I do know also that you're a huge fan of the movie They Live. And so maybe that kind of seeped into your brain with that. Because you have a tattoo, They Live, don't you?
That's right there. Science fiction is my favorite genre of films. And I think a big reason of that is I'm, you know, very much like a futurist, you know, like I kind of have utilized this art form to understand how the world is going to change. Hopefully for the better, even though if you look at science fiction, it presents two versions of the world, right? One is dystopian and one is semi-utopian. Right now, it kind of feels a little more dystopian than, but you know, it's like, but the world has a way of working that way where things have to get worse before they get better. And a lot of times all of our problems and solutions are almost wrapped up in the same technologies, right? Like, so the same thing that could kill you is also kind of the thing that can save you.
Which is like right now you said also that social media has removed the mystique of musicians. I think social media has also caused a lot of these problems.
Oh, yeah. I think I would say probably 60 to 70% of the anxieties I think people feel on a day-to-day basis is primarily caused by the internet and social media.
Yeah, for sure. You know?
But it's in a weird way, I think, so many of the benefits now are almost like invisible to us because it's so ingrained. You know,
it's part of our accepted practices. Yeah, that we don't even realize the positives anymore, and we focus on the negatives.
Well, they just are, right? You have something like this where you're doing a show remotely that is all made possible, where your commerce and the way you pay your bills and you, whatever, you have families, you send them to college and all that stuff that is. Would not exist without, you know, so these things that are these kind of like wealth generation tools, you know, for so many and very like there's so much freedom, like, you know, independence tapped into that, and yet it does come at a really grave cost that we're still, I think we're like a generation that 50-100 years from now we're gonna look back on and like, whoa, look at what they went through, like we're like
right. I agree with that 100%. I want to bounce around a little bit about a few other things, because not only, obviously, we mentioned a few of the bands you've been in, but you toured with Ice Nine Kills for a hot minute, right? You did that, and you knew them because you guys shared the same management and lawyer, and that's how that friendship was forged. Is that correct?
Well, I was already friends with the guys because, you know, we had played together and just hanging out in L.A. and just being a fan. Mm-hmm. And then yes, those two kind of connective tissues probably was the main catalyst, you know.
And then another project that I don't think a lot of people realize is The Wedding Band, which you obviously didn't found, but you are a part of. And for those that don't know, it's just two slackers known as Kirk Hammett and Rob Trujillo, right? And then fucking Whitfield Crane singing from wow. Ugly Kid Joe, and you're in, and you do covers, and it's not like a yearly thing. It's just you guys play when you want to fucking play, basically, right?
Well, when they want to play, or when they want to play. Right. I think, you know, the things really slowed down surrounding the, you know, the prep and kind of everything going for this new Metallica album. It's, you know, it's insane how hard they work and how busy they are. So I think they try and fit it in into time periods where it's not as like intensive, and they're so like in that zone, and
Right.
that stadium tour they're on is just like, it's crazy.
And then for people that don't know, you were a fill-in guitarist for Lamb of God that opened for Metallica back in 2009. Is that when you guys first met, or you knew them before then?
No, what's funny was the first, I didn't get to see Metallica till 2003. And my friend Denise Kuricki, one of my best friends, was working for MTV at the time. She got me into the shows, the Summer Sanitarium tour with Linkin Park, Limp Bizkit, Mudvayne, Deftones. And she was doing this like pre-game parking lot party for the whole tour. And she's like, "Hey, do you want to meet Metallica?" And I was like, "Nope." I go, "I don't want to meet them as a fan. I want to meet them like as like a musician."
That's
And
cool.
with having no idea, like, and by the way, I was not that successful at the time,
Were
or
you in God Forbid already?
yeah,
And the,
you know,
okay.
but just I don't know why. That was just my instinct. And then, you know, fast forward, you know, 5, 6 years later, I'm on the tour with them, and I get to actually meet them as human beings, you know, because, you know, being, I think when you are a musician, and I don't consider myself very famous or that important, but you know, I try and just humanize people and don't just treat them like an avatar, or like, you know, people are more than like their body of work or like how what they've kind of provided for you. And I think, you know, I try and kind of disarm that, and it's hard to do that when they're in an event where they're kind of like interfacing with just, you know, you when you're someone like that and you've been famous, that famous for so long, 99% of people that you encounter want something from you.
Right,
I
that's
think
for
that is
sure.
that's
Yeah,
in
even
your
if it's just a
all the time.
picture or an autograph or something, it's not just a genuine, hey
Something.
man,
Or just your
this.
attention, just your time.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's wild. All right, before we go any further, these guys have been sponsoring us for, I think we're getting on 5 years, which is wild. You know the phrase, $60 kilos. You know what we're talking about. High quality curated kratom only at yourkratom.com. If you want to stock up on kratom, if you don't care about kratom, this is not the ad for you. But if you're looking for great quality kratom, unique strains, unique blends, it's all at yourkratom.com. They've been sponsoring us for, I think, closing in on 5 years. You get to buy kratom in those $60 kilos. You get the stock up. You know it'll show up quickly. You know it'll be high quality. What more do you need? Just go to yourkratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. Let's get back into it. So to go back to Bad Wolves again. So we did two albums with Tommy, and then the third album was actually, I believe, recorded, right? And then you redid it with DL, or at least some of it was
I
recorded.
mean, I'd say half of it was we kind of write and record at the same time. So our demoing process is very much attached to the actual recording process. So about half the album was done, but a lot of stuff was re-recorded. Every piece of music or lyric that was previously written by the other guy was changed. So we had
Right.
to so you know, it was a mishmash.
And there was no question when that happened, like we are going on, we'll find another singer. It was never well, I guess that's that. Go back to X-Men, another name for X-Men, you know, we another notch in the belt. Like, or was that never a conversation?
So I initially wanted to just start a whole new band. Just not try, you know, I never envisioned
We could
an
do this, guys. What do
environment.
you think of this name? How about Really Bad Wolves?
Really pretty okay wolves. Kind of you know, semi upset dogs.
You would think of that. You're thinking time to move on. Yes, what you
Well,
thought,
no,
or
this is,
start
you
over.
know,
Start over.
well, I really think we were in an environment where most of the fan base was connected to him. And so I thought, to me, it was much more similar to like Sepultura continuing on with about Max, right? Where it's like the back, like I just never felt those first couple records, I never felt like it was my band. I just felt like I was playing in the band. So to kind of like feel that, it just felt like too daunting. And then essentially the idea to, you know, but then when you know, was presented, hey, let's go our separate ways, you know, he was like, all right, you guys can go ahead. And, you know, I'm cool with it. And I was like, and it was like, really? Like, I just didn't expect that. And so it was almost like something was like, oh, this is cool. But then, you know, it came at a great cost, you know?
Right.
And it's like, and back in my head, it was always like, man, I never really wanted to do this. Mm-hmm. But basically, you know, the higher ups, basically they feel their mentality is that when you have a brand that's that strong, you always stick with the brand. Because when you have to start something new, when you have to start from the bottom, it's the likelihood your new thing is going to get as successful as where that brand is, even if it's diminished, mm-hmm. right, is like almost impossible to pull off. So I see the logic of that, but it's also like we are the ones who had to go through the fire,
right,
where we are now. Like it's a lot of you know, kind of sweat equity, but also like trauma equity.
Right. And also, like, I remember I would imagine that album for Dear Monsters, which is now, it's funny, it's almost three years old now, I think, right? 2021
came out.
Yeah. That had to be a really chaotic experience. But then Die About It is an album that you guys all worked on together. I know John is the chief songwriter, but you guys are all involved with the songwriting yeah. process. And I have to say, as a fan of you guys since Disobey, this is my favorite album.
Thank you.
Hands down, my favorite album. Set You on Fire is my favorite track on the record. I know that you wanted Hungry for Life to be the ending track, and you lost that debate. But, you know, it is a phenomenal record. And what's funny is DL, who comes from such a fucking, I mean, people that know Acacia Strain, go listen, a very heavy band. He was the one pushing for the more mainstream sensibilities on this record, right? Is that because he comes from that world and he wanted to kind of push this to be a little bit more mainstreamy, if that makes any sense.
I think, you know what it is? It's like, I think DL was always known for being like the guy who wrote the heaviest riffs and the breakdowns. And even when he was working on other projects and people would want him to write for other things, that's what they wanted from him, you mm-hmm. know? And I think he kind of had all this stuff in terms of like his taste and artistically what he wanted to get out of just hiding under the surface, but he never had a project where he could really express that. Mm-hmm. So I think he just needed to get a lot of this stuff out of his system, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of like wanting to be more of a rock band. But I think, you know, in many ways, I think it was something we kind of had to figure out between Dear Monsters and this record. Where I always want everything to be heavier, mm-hmm. you know, and not because I'm like, I think there's a reflexive version of that where you're just like, you're almost pandering or you're just dumbing it down. And you're just like, I want to be heavy because it's heavy. It's not that. It's just where I kind of see the place. It's not that much, just a little more in this direction. Like, oh man, I just want one heavier song or mm-hmm. one, you know, give this song just a little more edge to it. And it's subtle. But I'm like those, that's where my sensibilities lead. Cause I feel like if it gets a little too much in the bubblegum camp or too mm-hmm. much in the cheesy camp, then it veers into something that I don't connect to mm-hmm. as much. But an album, man, it's a collective thing, right? Like everyone wants what they want out of it. And then, so what the ending part of it is, it ends up being a triangulation between mm-hmm. all of that. Right. And hopefully everyone is happy with that final product. But I mean, I've made records where I wish I could have done it like this, but that's, if it was that way, it wouldn't be a band, right? It would be a solo record,
right? Then you have, so, but also what's interesting, it's so obviously a letter to what you guys went through with songs like NDA. I mean, that's could not be more on the nose. Bad Friend, there's a great line, the lyric is "Bad friends die alone," great lyric, you know. And
I actually don't think that has anything to do with that situation, but that is my favorite line on the record.
It's a great line. But
that's
even,
what I wanted to name the album, and I got outvoted.
Oh, that's funny. But it's a great line. But even like songs like Set You on Fire, I mean, there are things that you could think, oh, well, this is all. And the bottom line is, I mean, NDA, there's no way around it. That's obviously can't be yeah, more
I think
on the
it's
note.
Just NDA and Die About It, I think, yeah. That's that subject matter, as far as I know.
Yeah, but it's great to put a, like, you know, I mean, musicians have been doing this forever, is write what you know. And that's what was going on. So let's just fucking write it, which is great. The question I want to ask, though, which is a 180 of all this, when you talk about different vibes on the record, where the fuck did you guys find Saxl Rose and his little horn bit? Because that's cool as shit.
I mean, John found him, but he does a lot of stuff.
I never heard of him before. For the greatest name ever for a saxophone player.
Pretty great. It's pretty good. But he crushed it. He did a few takes of that, and then we ended up kind of cutting some of it up and putting it in different sections. But it makes it, and it's like, it's a weird situation with this record, because I feel like in many ways the album format, it can work for you and kind of work against you, where I feel like a lot of people still haven't heard like the album, right? They're mm-hmm. hearing the singles or there's some of this out there, and I really want to spend the next year on the road playing these songs and introducing them to people, because we like the diversity, and we like a song like that. We've never done anything like that, top to bottom. We've never had a
great
song.
It's also, it feels like especially when he comes in, that it's like a scene in an 80s action flick or something is what it connotes in your brain when he starts playing. It's really fucking, whoever's idea that was, I give you credit. Like, even like the fact that there's a rap on there in Legends Never Die. I mean, that's fucking, I'm sure that had to go up for debate for quite some time, but great. It all works out.
Well, I mean, there was rappy stuff right from the get-go. Songs like, what is it? Like Learn to Live and I'll Be There. It's pretty rappy. It's just, it's a little more aggressive, but it is rhythmically very much in that phase. And some of that stuff, we didn't even know DL could do stuff like that. And he kind of just did it. And at no point did I question it, because it just sounded good. And it's like, I just, I want diversity in vocals. I don't want just the one thing for an entire record. I want heavier stuff. I want really beautiful, pretty stuff. And I want, I want it all. So the fact that he can do that. And to me, the real impressive one, though, is Die About It. I think the lyrics are amazing. I think the cadence is just, it's very hooky.
Really, by the way, as I said, it is my favorite record of the four right now, for sure. It is. And that, as you said, the Knife EP is out as well, which it says EP, but it's one fucking song, but it's a good song. It's a heavy song. Yeah. But a couple of other quick things before we do the first. You also, for a while, were writing for VH1 and for Metal Sucks? No, was
Metal
it?
Metal Sucks. I was a website called creativelive.com.
Are you still doing some of that freelance writing? You don't have time for that shit anymore.
No, I mean, I really wanted to keep it up. And then what kind of happens, and I think, you guys might understand this as well, just being kind of in different media spheres is how quickly things change, right? So, when you had basically the entire blogosphere has more or less gone away, outside, a lot of those sites have become more, they become like news sites more than, hey, here's like an op-ed. And a lot of people who used to do that type of writing, you'll take that same content and that'll just be like a YouTube clip.
Right.
Make a vlog instead of a blog. And right around that time, I started 2016, I started the podcast, and I was a lot more consistent back then. And a lot of my focus went towards that. And then once Bad Wolves got busy, that became the centerpiece, and it became very difficult to kind of, wanting to invest that kind of time in something that, I think like anything, like if you're going to engage in any kind of endeavor, if you can't really do it to its full potential, then it's going to be lacking. It's not going to have, the kind of real weight behind it. And I was the kind of guy, I'd work on an article. That's all I would do that day.
You're supposed to get a lot of shit. Like, people would blame VH1 for your list of like the 18 bands you need to hear or whatever. People would get
angry.
No, I think
they blame me more than each VH1. But well, so I say I have very when you write on the internet, you definitely develop very thick skin, especially when you're making opinions about metal, which I totally get. I would probably think I was an idiot too if I was reading some of those lists or articles, because it's subjective,
it's
right?
Subjective. Everything is subjective. People get so angry when it's just fucking subjective. And also, one more little notch in your belt. You wrote a song on the Body Count album. That's fucking cool as shit.
Dope.
One of the coolest things I've ever done.
Tell Ice-T to stop fucking cock blocking us. We were trying to get him on the show for years, for God's sakes.
Listen, he's a busy man.
I don't give a shit.
We'll start with Ernie C and work our way up to him. We're good with Ernie C coming in.
Hey, I had Ernie on my podcast.
Oh, so was it when you were consistently recording, or when is it when you were putting
yeah,
out
during,
whatever
during the
fucking?
pandemic? Listen, I got busy. I'm in three bands, you know, four bands if you know, if you, it depends how you kind of count it, but you know, try, and by the way, at least with everyone, I had a podcast before the pandemic. All right, I was one of
Right.
these, you know, weaklings who started one in the pandemic just to get a bunch of time, and then I continued it after the pandemic. So, all right, I'm not, I've been doing it, all right, in the trenches.
All right, I agree. All right, so look, Shannon, we're gonna hit the first now, and then we'll wrap up with plugs and stuff.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We have asked every guest this since the dawn of time, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll. What was the first concert you ever went to? Because you, Doc Marlon Coyle, wanted to go to, not because someone else dragged you, and hopefully a band we know, not some crappy local New Jersey band that only you and I might know.
No, it was 96, I think, and it was Pantera, White Zombie, Deftones at the, you know, Meadowlands, whatever, you know, I don't know what it's
called.
That's
a fun goddamn show,
Doc.
That's
a great fucking bill.
That's a fun goddamn show.
I just saw the new version of Pantera at MSG a couple nights ago. It was fucking awesome. It was
still
wild.
Haven't seen it.
Oh my God. It was powerful. They do a video montage of the brothers, and it's fucking emotional, man. I didn't know them that well. I met Dimebag once. I met Vinny a couple times on Chip Rock and interviewing him and his brother once or twice. It was hard to fucking watch that. That was rough. It was really sad, but boy, Zach kills it. Charlie kills it. So it's really great, amazingly live. Okay, so now the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed was not your first drug.
First drug, I would say mushrooms.
Okay, and, how old are you?
I was 20, and it was actually a pretty transformative experience because I took like an eighth. It was like in this chocolate, and like it went from like everyone was like almost looked like a caricature, like almost like a cartoon character of each other, until, and it was like it went from that to like all the way to the Matrix, like where I had no, the whole world looked like a kaleidoscope, and I was kind of like, you know, and I'll kind of open up my third eye after that, you know.
That's cool. And have you partaked more after that, or that was a one time it fixed me, I'm good kind of thing?
I had some very bad experiences after that, you know, where like, but I don't think it was about the compound. I think what I realized about mushrooms, and I think weed to a different degree, is that it taps into your subconscious. So if you are suppressing any deep-seated issues, it will come up. And what I realized is like, it's not a party drug. It's something that you actually utilize to confront your subconscious and hopefully work through that and then find some answers. And so it's a different kind of thing. And I kind of, and since I haven't really messed around with, I've, you know, much recently, but I would like to, but not as a party thing, as a more like,
as a medicinal thing,
medicinal, but also a therapeutic and like something tapping in. Cause I feel like, especially as adults, we suppress things to just try and get through, and that's right. Not always the healthy thing. And we finding our way to our subconscious is not always available without some help sometimes.
What a deep man Doc Coyle is. I know. What about the first time Doc Coyle had sex?
I was 18.
It's a little later.
I was going to predict 16. Yeah, I just assume everyone from Jersey at 16. Yeah.
No, like he said, I was such a nerd. I wasn't getting no play. And it was my first like high school girlfriend, but it was after I graduated. So was I 18 yet? Yeah, I might have been. Either I was like 18, freshly 18, or like late 17, but I think I was 18.
So you were in God Forbid already too, right?
Yeah, it was God Forbid at that time, you know, right. That became, you know, a man, you
wow
know,
that's
at
good
time.
Rock and roll does that for everybody.
It's funny that the next God Forbid record was nothing but love songs and stuff like that, because you got so
you'd be amazed how many God Forbid songs are love songs.
How about
like,
a love song,
like original emo metal,
a ballad tempo, how about that? Okay. So now Bad Wolves are going to play in Rockville 2024, Incarceration Fest. They're going to be at the Sturgis Rally. The newest song, as we said before, is Octane. Knife is out as well. The album Die About It. God damn it.
We announced the tour. We announced the tour today too.
Oh, I didn't see that. Where's that tour? What's that one?
So we're direct support for POD.
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah. And we're with Norma Jean, great metalcore band, and this new band from Finland called Blind Channel, who's like really crushing it right now. And it's just like a full US tour. We're going to most of the places. So, you know, check out badwolvesnation.com.
Most of the places is an interesting way to put it. Okay, James, your plugs.
The James Mattern, Instagram and YouTube's The James Mattern.
That's it.
Let's just go short and sweet. I'm also going to be very transparent. My bladder right now is cursing at me languages I don't speak. It is fucking like, it's unbelievable. And I'm wearing dress pants for some reason on a fucking podcast. Like Shannon,
give your plugs and make it really long so that James pisses himself.
Come on, Shannon. Hurry the fuck up, baby. I love you.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is. Jane, we talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
Okay, Doc, don't indicate until all three of us chime in. Does Doc Coyle believe in ghosts? James, you first.
I'm going to say goddamn no, because Shannon, he's an intelligent man. He thinks about everything. You ask him about food, he'll fucking break it down. This man doesn't believe in ghosts. Not a chance.
Shannon, don't answer because I think people are going to think that I'm stealing your answer.
I think you were going to do that.
I'm going with yes, I believe so, for a couple of reasons. One, your idea that bands on tour forever eventually see weird shit is one thing.
That is, also, you are stealing my answer, by the way, just because I didn't say it just now.
No, but also...
Way to put his feet to the fucking fire, Shannon. Don't take no shit from no one, Spider.
He's talking so much about spirituality and getting in touch with your inner self.
Fuck,
and I feel like that ties to the metaphysical in my head. Now you, Shannon, and shit on me all you like.
That's why you wanted to go ahead of me, because you just repeated what I say on every other show and you wanted to say it before I said it. Wow, Ralph. I implore the listeners to go and check the other times I said those exact same things. And also, I say, yes, Doc believes in.
It's clearly a yes now. I just saw a poker tell from him. I just saw a fucking poker tell. Jesus Christ.
For me, it was specifically because of his mention about the third eye, which could just be a psychedelic thing. But I think he believes in more than meets the eye.
Okay, and let's see, Doc. Do you believe
Transformers? I believe in them bitches too.
Not a ghost guy.
Oh my God, I won!
Something else is coming.
No, here's my reason why. All right, I find it hard to believe. Okay, you die, right? It's over, right? You're dead, and then you just gotta hang out at like Walmart and like, you know, at like weird places, right? If that's the case, right, it's over for us, and then we just got to hang out and do nothing, like, and just wait for, like, you know, that lady from...
But you don't
like,
hunt people. Maybe, to playing call. Devil's advocate, that maybe it's only the people that have unresolved issues that are tethered to this world.
Who are these people just living with all their stuff resolved? I don't know anyone went to the grave just like... I figured it all out. Everyone's got some stuff, all right? It's only good things. I'm just saying.
I was wrong on that one, Shannon.
You know what I do believe, though? Here's what I believe: all like living things, right? So, like, you live in a house, right? What's a house made out of? Wood, right?
Mine's brick.
What's wood? It's a tree.
Mine's made out of straw, like one of those little piggies.
A tree was alive, and I think like all living things are connected. And I think you can have like, it's like an echo of life, right? And I think these units can kind of contain echoes of life and death, but it's not really an entity that is coherent and like it exists.
It's like residual energy.
Yeah, but I don't think
residual energy from a former life of something.
Yeah, because I think all the materials that we build things out of are part of like the life cycle, and to me that could make sense. But the idea we just hanging out waiting,
right? I guess it depends on your
no
definition.
Video games, you know what I'm saying? Netflix.
No, but that's your job. You're a ghost. So like right now you're a human and you're doing this, and then you die, and then they're like, "Look, man, you didn't
and
finish
then
everything."
Making fun of you because your dead body's hanging out at Walmart.
So now that like you go to the Ryman, Hank Williams clocks in. Randomly here and there and haunts people. It's like, I don't like your fucking music. Boo. And that's what happens.
From a guy that really has to go to the bathroom, you're getting insightful all of a sudden.
Well, the fucking tea just kicked in. I'm ready. Now I can pontificate. I'm ready. My boy Doc.
To put a button on it and to plug a former episode, we had Neil deGrasse Tyson on the show, and he said how you know, we're all made of the same material that stars are made out of. That's all the same. So we are all interconnected from the same stuff. So that's got to mean something, right? Which I think is for sure true.
I love the scientific approach is much more fascinating to me than like, because every time I watch one of these reality shows where it's dark and what's that man in? Someone's ruffling some shit in the background. It's just, come on, man. All right. Stop this. All right?
I mean, that's what I'm going to say. I don't want to open this can of worms, but with the aliens on Earth thing, why, when everyone in the world has a camera, every image of an alien is a shaky, shitty image from a 1970s camera when everybody has a cell phone?
Can I explain this for you real quick?
Oh, boy.
Oh, James is going to piss himself. James, you want to go run and pee?
It's been a great pleasure, guys. I'm going to go back and listen to this episode when it drops.
Right, go pee, James.
Then I'm going to DM you, sir, and I'm going to rebuttal this goddamn thing.
Let me hear, Docs. Right. James, we'll talk to you later. Let's hear.
Just tonight, if you're just outside, right, it'll start getting dark, take a picture literally of just your friends from 20 feet away in the dark, and you tell me how good that picture is. Okay.
Fair enough.
I'm in my room. In order for you to see me, I need to have 3 lights on, focus, and the camera needs to focus. So you're talking about, even if you have a camera that's really good, you think you can take a picture of something that is thousands and thousands and thousands of feet away, moving at a speed that is exceptionally crazy. Like, what I'm saying is...
Wait, let me answer something then. I'm going to interrupt. Are you saying aliens passed by but never came here?
I'm saying despite all of that, I could sit here right now, me and you could go on the computer, and I could for 48 hours, I could just show you video after video and picture after... But the problem is, every time... So if you actually take... If people see, and I see this on Twitter all the time because now it's just like, it's a free for all. There's just like all the fake stuff and the real stuff is all there. So no one knows what is real, right? Free speech, baby. So anyway, if you actually see a very clear video of a UFO, people will say that's actually evidence that it's fake.
Right. I get
because
you.
Because it's too clear. Because if you, and that's all that is confirmation bias, which is if you already don't believe, right, the idea that it's a clear video, that's evidence that it's fake, right? So what does that mean? So
you'll never get the answer.
What I'm saying is we don't know what is real, right? So whether it's out of focus, in focus, there's no like a third party governing body that can like ascertain its veracity. You know what I'm saying? Like, so
I hear what you're saying. I will say this to put a button on all of it. I can say with 100% certainty, there's no way you or I are getting to the bottom of it for sure.
I disagree. I think it's gonna, you know, more will come to light. But here's the thing: the way I am, though, it's like anything. Like, I think you should be most skeptical of the things you want to be true. So,
100%.
I would like this to be true, I think is more evidence that I need to be that much more critical.
Right. I do the same thing with the women I believe want to have sex with me. Like, I want it to be true. So I have to do a lot of research first. So, all right, follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton, my other podcast on health and wellness, the Good Sugar Podcast. There's a crazy story in my DM, in my reels. If you haven't seen it, we put something on one of our packages as a joke, and the police showed up to the Good Sugar store on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street because they thought it was serious. It's really worth checking out. It's very weird. But come to 3rd and 69th. You'll see the Good Sugar store. The Good Sugar podcast comes out every Monday. We add a song to our playlist every week, the sdrshow.com/playlist. And we are going to add my favorite song off of the new record, which is Set You on Fire. Doc Coyle at Doc Coyle on Instagram, doccoyle.net. Doc, thank you so much for taking time out on the SDR show.
Thank you guys, because, you know, most of the interviews I do, you know, they're not this fun. They're not as well prepared. You guys are real professionals over here. Okay?
You know why that holds a little water? I would say Ralph that speech like 4 times. I've listened to a lot of podcasts with you, so I don't accept it.
No, this is a lot of fun. I could keep going all day with you guys. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you, buddy.
Run through walls, cause you know I can. Break my bones like you said you would again.
And I'm not surprised that I found you here. Plumping hearts in a bottle of tears. Couldn't get away. I wanna set you on fire.
Listening to the SDR Show.